When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, let me tell you something. I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. You kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hello, folks, and welcome into this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro. I am back home following an absolutely spectacular week in Pittsburgh. Shout out to Rachel Gill and all the wonderful folks over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company for hosting me there. Their tap room, folks, is off the charts great. So if you're in town, you got to go over there. It's got to be on your list of things to go check out. 100-foot screen TV, all of their wonderful beers on tap, and a great staff. So go over there and check it out. You're absolutely going to be blown away by it. Along with a great experience I had there, what an incredible U.S. Open final round we got to be witness to. Oakmont is amazing, and hard enough on a good day. Throw in some water, which I thought would make it easier, soften the greens maybe a little bit. We'd see more birdies. Boy, was I wrong about that. The rough got even gnarlier. The fairways must have shrunk because no one could seem to hit one. Kudos to J.J. Spahn, though, who I left for dead after he started his final round with five consecutive fives, resulting in bogeying five of his first six holes. Thought he was done. But when play resumed after the weather delay, he came back to life, playing the back nine and two under. And as players all around him were backing up, guy seized the opportunity. And what about that 65-foot putt on 18? That thing is going to be replayed forever. The sting for dropping the players to Rory has got to be completely gone now. And maybe that was the thing that actually propelled him to get this victory this time around. I'm excited to see where his career goes from here. He has turned a good season that had already featured two second-place finishes, that one at the Players. A tie for third at the Sony Open back in January, a tied for sixth a few weeks ago at the Charles Schwab Cup Challenge. He's turned that now into a great season, featuring his first major. Like I say, I'm very interested to see where he goes from here. Now, on the opposite side of the coin, stock down Rory McIlroy. With all your media issues, and I don't say that because I'm sort of quasi one of them. I say that because of all his actions over the last year or so. Walking off without a word following losing last year's U.S. Open, no congratulations to Bryson, no sportsmanship. You sulked and walked away there. You have to ask yourself, is that what Mr. Palmer, Mr. Nicklaus, Mr. Player, Tiger would have handled? Is that how they would have handled that same situation? Nicklaus finished second in majors 19 times and never did that. I get not easy to deal with a sucker punch to the gut kind of loss. Of course it's not. But you handle it with grace and sportsmanship, not like Rory did. Does it suck that your name got leaked for the driver issue? Sure it does. But Scotty stood up and said, mine got tested too and removed as well. It takes a ton of effort to take the shine off being only the sixth player in history to win the career Grand Slam. But congratulations, Rory, you've done it. None of the other five guys who have achieved that, or really the majority of the PGA Tour, act like the spoiled brat that you do. So in the span of 2 months, you've gone from an amazing achievement to a guy I'm never going to root for again. And speaking of a guy I'll never root for again, see you, Wyndham Clark. I hope behind the scenes the USGA and the PGA Tour require him to go get help for anger management. I was disappointed to see that he's even in the field this week at the Travelers Championship. He shouldn't get to destroy lockers in historic Oakmont's locker room and then tee it up the next week. And oh, by the way, did you know that the benches in the locker room are the original ones from 1903 at Oakmont? They've got spike marks in it from where the legends of the game put their shoes up on that bench in order to time. So you get to see all the little spike marks in there. How great is that? Eric Johnson talked about that last week when he joined me when we were up at the tap room at Pittsburgh Brewing. So I tell you what, if someone like Wyndham Clark kicks in locker room doors just because he's frustrated that he missed a cut, I mean, really, Wyndham? And this isn't the first time that he's done something like this, right? He's kicked in stuff, destroyed property, thrown clubs. I mean, at the PGA Championship, flung his driver into a sign in frustration. That sign was just a few feet away from a volunteer holding a flag. The driver left a hole in the sign, snapped at the shaft, so the head fell, the shaft fell. I mean, my goodness. Following his round, of course, he apologized for that and for his behavior, saying his actions were uncalled for and completely inappropriate. And he clearly has things to work on. Well, here we are again. Guess you still got more to work on, don't you? The tour needs to step in and ensure this doesn't happen a third time. I'm quite sure if he did things like this at Augusta National, and remember when Phil first defected to LIV and was pretty much asked not to show up at Augusta National the following time around, if I would think Wyndham would be encouraged similarly not to show up if he did this at Augusta National. So I sure hope the tour and the USGA step in and say, hey, you know what, Wyndham, can we see you for a minute? Okay, on to this week's show. I get to share with you two guys that I happen to think the world of, starting with the guy who is the GM of Trib Live's High School Sports Network and the content here on Trib Live, and that is Justin Labar. Justin has been doing great things since he moved here to Pittsburgh from Maryland to attend college at Point Park University. You're going to hear some of the stories about the things that brought him here and that he got to work on, including his time in college, including getting to travel to Tampa to cover activities around Super Bowl 43 for Point Park's newspaper, his transition immediately from there right to the Trib after college and getting to experience this year's U.S. Open on-site with his father, who traveled from Maryland so they could spend Father's Day together for the first time in a long time. Justin is also a pro wrestling analyst and a weekend host for the very popular Busted Open radio show on SiriusXM. He's got great stories and insights, so I know you're really going to enjoy that conversation. Following him, I'm joined by a two-time winner out on the PGA Tour and a four-time Hall of Fame inductee, and that is Richard Zokel. This is the eighth time that I've been privileged to have Richard as part of the show. He has been great each and every time. This time around, we focus on the lessons he's learned about having a winning mindset. He's actually putting a lot of what we talk about this week into a book that's going to be released next Father's Day, so June 2026. It's going to be called Zokology, Winning with Your Mind. So you'll hear about not trying to live up to unreasonable expectations that we set for ourselves, plus that others place on us. He also shares strategies for quieting the noise in our minds and how a Sony Walkman, you remember those from back in the day? How that helped him to get a win out on the PGA Tour. We also go back to the 2000 U.S. Open and his final round front 930 that he shot there at Pebble Beach, plus what it's like being inducted to those four Hall of Fames and giving yourself credit, patting yourself back when you achieve a great goal. That's okay. You got to do that too. Like I say, Richard's really fantastic. So I think you're going to love both of these segments this week. But folks, as always, let me start off this whole thing by saying thank you so much for tuning in and taking the journey with me. All right, but before we continue and get into the rest of the show, I want to start off by giving a shout out to my great friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find next on the T on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I also want to talk about our friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer, a brand that I have loved my whole life and started drinking when I was 21 years old, of course. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, The secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best-tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lye and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. And this year, get ready to experience a game like never before at the Keep, the brand new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, the Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are made even more spectacular as the autumn colors paint the landscape in rich hues of red, orange, and gold. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round here is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, the Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore. The Keep is open for preview play, and it's waiting for you. All right, now joining me is Justin Labar of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Justin is the GM of the Trib's High School Sports Network and Trib Live. He is also a wrestling analyst and a weekend host of the Busted Open Show on SiriusXM. He's also a creative writer and a producer. And I have the privilege of getting to work with Jason in conjunction with getting Next on the Tee up on Trib Live each and every week. Justin has just been fantastic to me, and I can't thank him enough for taking time out of his schedule to be a part of this week's show. Hey, Justin, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always good to talk to you, and now I get to be on this side of the podcast, which is fun.
Indeed. So, Justin, you've done some amazing things over the course of your career, starting back with your time at Point Park University. Talk about the great things that you've done going back to being a producer and a reporter in college.
Yeah, Point Park University was my reason for coming to Pittsburgh. I grew up in Southern Maryland and discovered Point Park, and I was fortunate as a teenager. You know, I knew pretty clearly what I wanted to do after high school. I knew I wanted to pursue broadcasting and TV and media, you know, sports, you know, within all that specifically. And I came across Point Park, and they just seemed like the perfect kind of place. It was a smaller school, smaller, you know, number of classmates in a class, which I kind of thrive in that environment. I never wanted to be, you know, in a giant lecture hall and be one of several hundred. So I liked the intimacy that Point Park had. It was right there in downtown Pittsburgh, so very close to, you know, TV stations, very close to where the sports teams are all at. And, you know, I dove right into it. It's actually 20 years this week that I've been in Pittsburgh since I came to Point Park. And I came just a few weeks after my high school graduation. I started doing summer classes, and I felt that really helped out, actually, because by the time the fall came, I didn't feel like a freshman. I felt like I'd already, you know, had a little bit of time to get a lay of the land and already start making connections, already start getting some, you know, PA work at KDK Television, already started to get my hands on the equipment and a microphone and camera within the broadcasting, both TV and radio stations. And that was something that, you know, I loved. And I'd be talking to high school friends of mine who went into the same fields, but they went to bigger universities, and they're telling me how they have to wait X amount of semesters or X amount of classes to even touch the, do all the fun stuff. I'm like, that sounds terrible. I'm like, and we're all paying a whole lot of money here. So Point Park was great. It really, you know, helped me make some early contacts. And it was a great experience, great hands-on experience. Got to travel with our basketball teams and call their games. You know, we even traveled out to Branson, Missouri one year because they were so highly ranked in the NAIA Division II. So had a lot of great experiences. And ultimately, it was Point Park that kind of was my bridge to the Trib.
Yeah, so take that a step further, right? You caught the attention of the Trib right away.
Yeah, it was my senior year, and you know, it was the start of the spring semester, so it's the you know January, right? And I know that I'm all right. I've got a few more months, and then it's graduation, and you know, my plan was to go to whatever town I had to be a sportscaster at a local news station, and you know, work my way to ESPN, I think was probably the dream at the time. And so I was just trying to continue to build my demo tape. I just wanted to put anything on there. And, you know, as January keeps going, the Pittsburgh Steelers earn their way to the Super Bowl. So they're going to be playing the Super Bowl in Tampa against the Arizona Cardinals. And I was the sports director at the time for our radio and TV stuff at Point Park, you know, covering our athletics. But I thought, man, there probably won't be too many other people coming out of college that could have Super Bowl, you know, coverage on their tape. That would be a real leg up. And so I boldly try to get anybody at Point Park who had, you know, some power and authority to listen to my pitch and let me, you know, send me down to Florida to help cover the event. And they appreciated, I think, my go-getterness, but they weren't going for it. But it just so happened there was an adjunct professor at the time at Point Park who was also a reporter for the trip. And he kind of caught wind of my ambitions. He introduced me to the editors at the trip at the time. And this is 2009. So this is a time where, you know, the Trib, traditionally a newspaper up to that point, you know, newspapers are all across the country are, you know, starting to use that word multimedia, and they're starting to incorporate video even more. And so basically the Trib editor said, look, we'll cover the bill for you to go down. And I went down to Tampa and I covered everything but the actual Super Bowl game. I covered, you know, the breakfasts, the dinners, did stuff, you know, went out to find the Steeler bar that was in the area, you know, did the tailgate stuff, you know, did every angle possible, got some interviews with some, you know, Hall of Famers, and ended up doing 20 something videos, short form videos that I sent back to the Trib that all performed very well, as you figure, you know, any kind of Steeler content that week would. And 3 months later, I graduated and had an internship to start the day after graduation. And I was and then 3 months after that, they hired me full time. I was the first person hired full time with the intention to just do video. And so I was now, you know, doing all kinds of types of videos, worked, did some stuff with news, did some stuff with features, but did the most with sports, and found myself, you know, running a camera, doing some editing, even doing some on air stuff at Steeler practices, at Penguins practices, at after games with our respective beat writers. So it was kind of wild that, you know, doing that work in Pittsburgh, which is the kind of work I wanted to do, I thought it would have took years to even get back to a top sports market like Pittsburgh. But it just so happens kind of taking the unusual path of let me go to a newspaper first media company ended up kind of, you know, accelerating my plans. And that's how it started at the Trib.
Justin, I obviously love the game of golf, but as a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, I was also a huge wrestling fan. Loved Dusty Rhodes, Hulk Hogan, all those guys. And one of the things that jumped out as I was looking back over the course of your career, wrestling analyst, weekend host at the Busted Open Show, which is one of the biggest on SiriusXM. Talk about how you got into professional wrestling.
Yeah, I was always a kid as a fan. That's usually how it starts for all of us, right? You know, we all have our memories. And for me, you know, the first time I saw it on TV, I was just so captivated by it. And, you know, my mom, when I was younger, she was a police dispatcher. And so she worked, she would work 2 12-hour days followed by 2 12-hour nights. And so then you can imagine the sleeping that has to be done at times just to, you know, be able to do that job and be very alert. And so, you know, I had a lot of time at different pockets of different weeks to where wrestling kind of became my babysitter. And, you know, whether it be the wrestling action figures or I would, you know, recording wrestling on VHS or go into the, you know, store and renting some videos, and I would just watch it and consume it. And I would just, you know, love the characters, love the over the top nature of it. And, you know, so that was fun as a youngster, but then probably as I got a little bit older, you know, late elementary, early middle school, I would say, pro wrestling was going through kind of another kind of boom in the mid to late 90s. And you were seeing more smaller regional, we call them in the wrestling business, independent shows. Basically, if it wasn't WWF or WWE, if it wasn't that or WCW, then, you know, you just kind of called it an independent show. And so in Maryland, there were starting to be more shows pop up. And my grandfather, who I was very close with, and he knew my love of pro wrestling. And at the time, he had a best friend who was on the Maryland State Athletic Commission, which if you ran a pro wrestling show, at least if you were doing it properly and legally, you had to be governed by them. You had to follow their policies and standards. So his friend Jim was on the state commission, and then his friend Jim's brother, Jake, was helping promote some of these shows, was helping, you know, book the venue, helping book the wrestlers, helping do all the logistics you have to do when you put on an event. And so my grandfather was just basically told the guys, hey, like, I'll help out. You don't have to pay me anything. I'll help facilitate. I'll help do whatever I can. Just let me bring my grandson along. You know, he'd get a kick out of it. And so the main thing that my grandfather was doing was helping provide transportation. And you're booking these wrestlers that are flying into BWI Airport or Dulles Airport or wherever. And you got to get them to the hotel. You got to get them to the venue. And, you know, so this was a cost saving rather than the guys having to pay, rather than the promoter having to pay, you know, for car service or limo or whatever. My grandfather and I would go, you know, and he'll pick them up at the airport and basically be kind of like their liaison, be their driver. And so I have, you know, some fun memories of riding the car and George Animal Steel's riding with us, or Greg the Hammer Valentine's riding with us. And, you know, when you're 10, 11 years old and you're just seeing these guys sit in this, 95 Oldsmobile, it's just, you go to school on Monday and nobody believes you, right? It's not like, you know, I had Polaroid photos, but you know, obviously this is 1997, 1998. There's no social media for me to selfie this. And so you go Monday, like the first Monday I went to school after one of those experiences, everybody's like, just looking at me like, what? Like, you're the biggest liar and the biggest, you know, whatever. I'm like, no, but I really did this. I saw this and you're not going to believe what I heard. Yeah. So the number one thing that did, aside from all of the fandom, VIP awesomeness, was it let me know at a younger age than probably most other kids would realize that, like, hey, this wrestling thing's actually like people make a living doing this. Like there's a business to this. And then again, I always had an interest in television, even at that age. So and then I start thinking and realizing, oh, like there's camera people and there's producers and directors and like there's things that have to be done. And so, you know, pursuing mainstream sports, you know, professional sports teams, as I was outlining that I was, you know, aiming for in college, that was always the realistic goal. You know, there's a whole lot more, you know, range to cover, you know, the 30 different pro teams and the different leagues. And there is to, how do you even get into pro wrestling? Like, I mean, you know, how do I find myself into TV and pro wrestling? So it was always there as an interest. It wasn't until as I was actually getting out of college, while I was in college, I managed to network with some WWE contacts. I was interning at a radio station in the Maryland or in the DC area, excuse me. And it was a station that WWE would use promotionally when they were coming to town. So I made some contacts, got to actually even do some shadowing behind this TV producer on site at a few WWE events. So that started getting me some contacts a little bit. And then I did some writing for Bleacher Report. I was starting to do some coverage work, all simultaneously while I'm doing the Trib, right? As I get out of college, I'm doing the Trib. That's my main job. And I'm kind of like doing the wrestling on the side. And I don't know why, Chris, but I kept the two very apart. Like I didn't really tell many people in the Trib early on about any of the side work I was doing for wrestling. I think probably because I was afraid that the Trib would say, no, we're your first priority. You know, we're your, you know, you can't work for these other companies. I think that's probably what my fear was at the time. And I ended up outing myself in a very, and if you look back, you go, oh, duh. I kind of simultaneously kept everything running. I had my wrestling stuff going, my wrestling coverage and trying to get contacts in the business and cover it. And, you know, and then I'm still working for the Trib. Well, you know, I didn't have anything going on this one particular weekend for the Trib. So I felt like I was totally clear in my schedule and I built up enough, you know, what have you, and trying to cover and give my opinion as an analyst on pro wrestling, on WWE specifically, that I got invited to come up to New York City to go to 30 Rock, the NBC building, and NBC Sports at the time had a show with Michelle Beadle, and she wanted me to come and do a few wrestling segments to talk about, and it was one of the big pay-per-views was happening there in New York City, and she wanted me there to talk about it. And so, I mean, it was a huge thrill, like, whoa, like, this is big. I'm going from having just done some local radio hits or local, you know, some local stuff. I'd written or been on web, been on a video podcast or stuff like that. But I mean, I'm going to be on TV at NBC Sports, like being brought up, being, you know, the car service, the whole, you know, name on guy with my name on the car waiting to bring me in, like the whole thing. Well, I don't know why, Chris, but I never stopped to think, you know, somebody might see this. And I walk out of 30 Rock and I'm feeling, you know, feeling on cloud nine and, you know, ready to go, you know, grab some dinner and grab a drink and toast to this great experience. And I have an email waiting from one of the higher up editors of the Trib at the time. Just, and all it says is Friday. All it says, hey, I need to see you on Monday.
Oh.
And I went, oh yeah, maybe somebody might've saw this. But I actually ended up going back Monday, and basically the gist of the conversation was, so you're like a pretty knowledgeable big deal talking about pro wrestling. I was like, well, I'm not a big deal. I'm like, but I am very, you know, invested in it. And he's like, why aren't you doing something for us? And from that point on, in addition to any video work I was doing with the Trib for the next few years, I would write a column once or twice that would appear on triblive.com for sure. And occasionally would get some space in the print paper. So that felt great. Cause I'm like, all right, now, if I'm spending some time on the side doing stuff with wrestling, I feel like at least the Trib's getting some benefit out of it. So we did that for a few more years, which was fun.
So from there, you catch on with one of the top shows on Sirius XM and one of the big podcasts that are out there on any of the platforms, Busted Open. How'd you catch on with those guys?
Yeah, you know, I just continued to do all the different things I could in pro wrestling, whether it was having my own podcast at a time or, again, working for different outlets, different websites that had certain levels of exposure. And it started in 2020. The Busted Open is started by a guy named Dave LaGreca. He's still the primary host Monday through Friday. And, you know, he built the thing. You know, he started it at, you know, he'd worked in radio and worked at Sirius XM for a while and covering, I think, mostly with the NFL. And it started with him just starting the show as like a one day a week. And I think he did it for free. And then it's grown to what it is now. And so it was 6 days a week in 2020. And he called me and said, hey, I'd love to have you come on. Just do a 15, 20 minute segment each week. And we ended up calling it Spar with LaBar. And I would just come on. It was just literally a way for me just to banter with Dave and whatever co-hosts he has. And he has a list of great co-hosts that are all pro wrestlers that are all in the business that have, you know, great degrees of credibility. And so it was just a way for me to get involved, get in front of the Busted Open Nation, as we call them, and did that for a couple years. And then it was in late 2023, November of 2023, where the announcement had gone out that, hey, Busted Open is now going to go from 6 days to 7 days. We're going to add a Sunday show. And they had asked me if I wanted to be one of the co-hosts. I said, you know, you've done great with the stuff you've done in the last couple of years. The audience seems to know you here. Everybody gets along. And yeah. And, you know, and Sunday, you know, Sunday was a day I usually didn't have any other professional conflicts. And so I was like, this is, you know, as you said, this, you can type in WWE or pro wrestling, you know, in any podcast store, and Busted Open is going to be right up there. So that's the podcast version. And then the 3 hour complete full show that's happening on radio, you know, on Sirius XM is one of the biggest. And so I was like, I can't turn this down. And it's just been an incredible experience. I still have fun doing it. And it's, you know, it's obviously gained more exposure, more audience. And that's been a great thing to do. You know, and again, it's on a Sunday, so I don't have any, I usually don't have any Trib obligations or anything else going on there. So it's just been a great, a way to keep myself involved in the pro wrestling coverage, but doing it on one of the highest, you know, highest exposures and platforms that there is.
Indeed. Okay, let's talk a little golf because you play. I'm always curious, how did you get started and who was the first person to put a club in your hands?
Yeah, it was my dad. I remember one Christmas morning, I had opened all the presents that I thought were mine. And then I actually just saw golf clubs off. They weren't wrapped. They were just literally sitting propped up near the tree. And I just turned real, I just glanced at them. I didn't really do a hard look. I just saw golf clubs and knew my dad golfed. And I just looked over my dad and said, hey, look like you got golf clubs. And my dad goes, no, look a little closer. And like, I went up to him and then I realized, oh, these are clubs for me, for my size. And so that was, yeah, I'd probably say 9 or 10 if I had to guess. Yeah. And so I'd always seen him golf and I'd watched a little bit of golf on TV and I probably, you know, verbalized interest. And, so I got a first set of clubs and it was my dad. And, I took some lessons just to kind of just learn all just basics, you know, just how to approach the ball and just etiquette and just, you know, find a grip. And I really enjoyed it. And, you know, probably at that point, it was that through the rest of my teenage years, pretty much just going out in the summer times when I had time, or if my dad and I were, you know, in Ocean City, Maryland, you know, go out. So I got to play enough as a kid just to be able to know the rules, know etiquette, know, you know, just, okay, here is what my grip is, you know, try to learn, you know, how far I can hit a ball at certain clubs. And then when I moved to Pittsburgh, it really died off for like the next probably, you know, I don't know, I'd say at least 5-6 years, just for time. And then I'd say in the last, you know, in the last 10, I've really, you know, tried to pick up and play, you know, as much as I can from April through, you know, October-ish, and, you know, find different courses, you know, the, you know, within, you know, within driving distance. And it's, you know, it's become my number one thing to, I'd like to do when I have downtime and the weather is nice.
Now, you played one of the courses in the U.S. Open rotation a little earlier this year. I'm jealous as hell. Talk about your trip out to Pebble Beach.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, last September, we went for my buddy's 40th. No, we are nowhere near good to where we actually belong to be playing there. But they do let us Joe Schmoes go on there if you pay enough money. So, yeah, it was my buddy's 40th, and we started planning it for him, his wife and me and some of our other friends started planning it at his 38th birthday. And then when he turned 39, we handed him the reservation. So part of his present at 39 was saying, hey, next year when you turn 40, you're going to go play Pebble Beach with all of us. And it was a great experience. I mean, obviously the course is just in incredible condition, and it lives up to all that you see on pictures and on television. And, then aside from, you know, actually golfing the round, you know, on Pebble Beach, just the entire property and hospitality, man, if they know what they're doing. I mean, you're there, and, you know, obviously there's a, you know, all different people from different parts of the world, different, you know, different jobs, like all kinds of different people. And it doesn't matter. The moment that you are scooped up by their shuttle service at the airport, at the Monterey airport, I mean, they just treat you with such respect, and what can we get you, and what would you like? And it's just, you know, just it really complete five-star top-notch experience. It was awesome. And then that was all just before you even teed off, you know, it was great.
So speaking of teeing off, first of all, weather good, a lot of wind, rain, anything?
What weather was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't even having to look at the weather app once of even like it was absolutely gorgeous conditions we were there Thursday through Sunday, and every day was perfect. You can golf, at any hour on any day. Well, I guess like this, Pebble Beach is perfect. We did play Spanish Bay on Saturday. There was a little more wind there, but it was, but I mean, based upon kind of like where you are, like you're going to have some wind, but it wasn't enough to, like, you know, damage your round or damage your fun. You just had to kind of compensate for, you know, a few tee shots on some wind, depending on the hole. But overall, it was beautiful. And I guess then everybody there says that was the best time of year to be there, in terms of not having to worry about fog or rain or, you know, crazy, crazy wind. So yeah, that was playing Pebble and the whole experience and having a caddy and then you're playing this course, you know, and some of the fun of that, aside from playing the course and just play, you know, trying to, you know, do the golf end of it, is as you're walking this course, the sights you're seeing, and then some of the houses you're seeing, and, you know, the caddies, you know, oh, that's the Golden State Warriors GM's house there. And, oh, well, Tony Romo and Jim Nance are over there. And, oh, see that? That was John Travolta's house in the 90s. He had a helicopter pad up on the top. I mean, like, it was just insane. It was just like, where are we? But beautiful. I mean, absolutely beautiful, incredible experience.
All right. So I got to ask you, the par 3 seventh hole, short little par 3, but it's out there on a peninsula. What'd you hit? How'd you do?
I believe I double bogeyed. Tee shot was straight, but just a little bit short. Just a little in front of the green, and you know, just didn't putt well. That was kind of the, like, I felt like the caddies gave me really good advice, and even still, I was like my putting needed to be better. I'm like, God, if these guys were not here giving me their eye and their expertise, I don't know what I would have done on the green. I believe I shot a 5 on the number 7.
All right. So closer to home now in Pittsburgh, do you have some favorite courses that you enjoy playing around the city?
You know, I don't get to go to too many. I kind of have the same rotation of, let's say, probably like 4 or 5. And a lot of that just kind of comes out of, you know, you have the family and everything. So it's like, you know, I'm already asking to, you know, get out and, you know, play a 4.5 hour round or what have you. So I don't want to tack on too much of a crazy drive. There's a course, Cedarbrook, that I enjoy. There's a course, it was called Scenic Valley. They just switched in the last couple of years. 17. Oh, it's the year the township was created. It's going to bug me. But if you Google them, you may find it. But they just did new owners, new renovations, new clubhouse, and 1781 club. That's what it is. I enjoy playing there. There's a little place, nothing too fancy about it. They've had a new greenskeeper in the last 5 or 6 years who's doing great work to it. It's definitely gone up, and it's a place called Riverview. There's a couple places I play, nothing too crazy, but I usually keep it to the same, probably 4 or 5 for the most part, unless I'm doing an outing, which obviously through the Trib or through wherever, which, you know, obviously dictates where I'm going to go and play. But I would say those would be the most frequented courses for me.
You were telling me that your father was coming into town for the U.S. Open. What was it like going out to Oakmont, checking out the U.S. Open, and getting to do it with your father?
Great experience. You know, living in Pittsburgh and him living, you know, he still lives in Southern Maryland. You know, I can't remember the last time we got to actually see each other on Father's Day weekend. And so it worked out that we got to do this together, which is great. And that was just a fun experience. And we got out there and, to see the course up close. And then obviously all the pomp and circumstance with all the great names that are out there on the tour. Even just the process, of course, getting in to the course because of the transportation and what you have to do to get in there. So you really feel like, man, this is a big deal. We're having to go through all of these, you know, hoops to get there. And, you know, we got there and the course was beautiful and, got to see, I would say the most up close we had posted ourselves up for a little bit right at the green on number 4. And this was fun to watch because it's a hole where you have the church pews are going on down the left side. And then where they had, then there's some more sand and more bunkers surrounding the green. But where they had the pin placement on this Friday that we were sitting there at that green was just, it was on the back and it was up high on a slope. So you were just watching just some guys trying to make some shots. And some of the things the balls did, if they just missed their mark, was just incredible to see up close. Got to see Scottie Scheffler, got to see Brooks Koepka and their groups come through there on that Friday. So that was a real thrill to watch that up close. Whole thing though, again, it's just a great experience. I mean, you can tell, even something as simple as like you go into the big official, merch tent that they have and up towards the front where you'd enter. And, it's like as big as like a Kohl's department store. It's huge. And you get all the stuff you have. And then, the checkouts in the back of the tent. And then it's really not even a tent. So it's like a building they erected. Then you go out the back of the building, and then right there they have a tent outside for shipping. So if you want to ship all the stuff you just bought and you don't have to take it back wherever home is, I'm like, man, they've thought of everything. They have this thing down to a science of how to make this experience the best possible. So that it was, the whole thing was really cool. And doing it with him, it was, because again, he got me into golf. He's a pretty good golfer. He's way better than I am. He shoots in the 80s with regularity. So it was cool to be able to do something like that with him.
What did you think of the final round and JJ Spahn winning it?
What a story, man. I mean, obviously, okay, you're just watching. You're like, all right, here's a guy who's pretty much unknown, right? And what they said, never finished in the top 20. And so to see him doing what he's doing, especially after you see the rough start he has on the scorecard and a little bit of bad luck. So to see him come on and then to hear the stuff that we're hearing now after the fact of like, his kid was up in the middle of the night sick and, the weather delay kind of was greatly needed for him to kind of get a reset and get mentally back where he needed to be. So, very cool story. I know some people are, I've heard some opinions of, people disappointed because, all the big names, weren't there in contention down in the stretch and what have you, and which I understand and get, and certainly, I understand that point, but I also think that there's something beautiful about the U.S. Open of all tournaments to have this guy just have this complete out of nowhere story and showing. So I think it's a lot of fun.
Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about the great things you're out there doing with Trib Live. Talk about the platform you've created and the great content that people get every day when they go on triblive.com.
Yeah, so triblive.com, one of the top websites you're going to find, number one news website in Western PA, one of the top in the state, and then nationally, does great numbers. I mean, it is Trib Total Media's site, Trib Live, and that is all things news, sports, features, everything in the Western PA, greater Pittsburgh market. So there's that, and I contributed to that for many years, as I said earlier, doing web video and sports related content primarily. Now I am the GM of our high school sports network, which is one of our subdomains off of Trib Live. And there we are streaming. We're covering over 100 high schools in the Western PA area, over like 7 counties, I believe. And we have articles, photos. We have hundreds of live stream broadcasts of games in a school year. We have podcasts. So, you know, that's what I oversee. And we, you know, have been doing that. And, you know, that continues to be, you know, that's something that just never, you know, it never stops, never slows down. Yeah, you get a little bit of a summer break when school's out. But, you know, even then, it's where's this top-notch senior going to college, or did they, you know, commit, or it's, you know, as soon as you blink, it's time for, you know, August football to kick in. So, you know, there's very little downtime, which is a lot of fun. And there's always a need, because even as, you know, for the community, because even as some parents and families have their kids graduate and they're done high school, well, then here comes the next class, the next wave. And so it's kind of like every so many years, you know, your audience, it's the same in terms of a demographic. It's all the same age range and same needs and interests, but it might be new people. So you're kind of educating new people every so many years as their kids move into the high school athletic community. So it's been a great service. And of course, we have our Trib Live podcast network, of course, which is this wonderful podcast, is one of the ones that's housed on there. So, you know, for people wanting golf content, they have this podcast. If they want high school sports, we have the Rebel Yell podcast with Don Rebel. If they want some more pro sports with a little bit of snarky comic tone, we have Tim Benz and his podcast. We have a newsroom podcast that we launched in the last year, coming straight out of the newsroom, kind of taking a more serious tone and more, you know, more traditional, you know, reporter journalistic approach to some stories. So there's a little bit of everything for a little something for everyone. But yeah, the podcast and then the high school sports network, the Trib Live HSSN, as we call it, and been overseeing that since we launched the network officially in 2017.
So Justin, as you look out over the next few years, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, do you have a vision for what you would like ultimately to see Trib Live evolve into?
Just continue to grow and you know, it's hard to imagine because, you know, again, I know how big the site is now and what the reach is. So it's sometimes I go like, there can't be people out there that haven't used or don't know about us, but I'm sure there are. And so you just want to continue to grow. And again, you know, whether that's website traffic and still being a resource to have our website bookmarked and saved on people's devices. And, you know, obviously with Google AI, and you can Google things and it'll just tell you things, and you know, maybe take the need from having to go to the site away. You don't want that. So, you know, continue to grow and create an experience that's fun for all users. Somewhat, like I said, with high school sports, but a little bit different, you know, you hope once you have the audience for Trib Live that you hold on to them and for the rest of their lives. But you do have to think about, you know, people that are maybe coming out of high school, out of college, who are starting to be in the workforce or starting to have families, you know, they may have not cared or needed news or Trib Live high school sports prior. And so you're hoping you grab them, you're hoping you capture them as they're on the lookout for where they want to get the news. And then of course, growing and staying with the times as it relates to social media. You know, I mean, obviously that's not going away, and that's a very big part of how people consume their content and get their information. So obviously wanting to do everything we can there, from, again, whether it's news, you know, whether it's hard hitting breaking news, whether it's sports coverage, whether it's a fun feature, whether it's high school sports specific, you know, it's just the vision is just, again, how can we capitalize on all of these different, social media platforms? How can we make our experience on the mobile device, on the desktop, how can it be the most rewarding and efficient and enjoyable for people? And so that's, you know, I know it's kind of broad based, but that's kind of just where we're at. I think if any one of us try to get too specific down a certain path of this is how it should be, we're going to be blind to, you know, to other things happening. We need to keep, you know, kind of keep our eyes looking everywhere, keep our head on a swivel of being, hey, well, you know, this is happening over here. You know, maybe we should start having a short form of how we give information this way. Maybe we should do this. So it's just growth and just, again, staying with the times. And as AI and as social media, and as all these things, you know, alter people's habits, just trying to make sure that we stay part of their habits.
Yeah. To that end, right, you mentioned holding on to them for the rest of their lives. I mean, Pittsburgh people travel well, right? And we know how much, you know, Steeler Nation takes over no matter what stadium the Steelers are playing at for an away game. Steeler fans take it over. People's roots back to the city of Pittsburgh, and we know that we're diverse and we're all over the country, if not all over the world, but being able to pull them back to their roots, their old high school, their alumni, wherever that might be, their old college, all of that sort of thing. I've got to imagine Trib Live and the things that you're doing is helping keep people grounded to their roots back in and around the city of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's a great point. You're right. I mean, Pittsburgh's known. It's known to be a city that, hey, maybe people might have moved out of at one point or another. But they, even if they do, they still keep their connection. They keep their connection to the sports teams. They keep their connections to, you know, right, their communities. And to that point, even beyond TribLive.com, beyond the High School Sports Network, we also have some Trib local sites. So we have a lot of different ones. But, you know, but like if you're from Sewickley, we have a Sewickley site. Oh, Shaler, we have, you know, like, so all these different, you know, neighborhoods. We have sites that, you know, will curate content for you that is relevant to that area. So, so you can get a little more micro, a little more hyper-local experience, again, all under the Trib Live domain. So yeah, that's, you know, as well said, that's what we do hope. You just, you want to grab them and keep them for the rest of their lives. And as things are evolving and changing in life, they will keep Trib Live as part of it. Like, oh, okay, now there's this social media platform. Okay, well, I'll sign up for that. Well, let me make sure I follow whatever accounts the Trib has for that, because that's the platform I'm going to live on now, but I'm going to make sure I have Trib. They're my trusted source of information for, you know, A, B, or C, whatever it may be. So yeah, that's the goal. It's just, again, things move so fast in today's world. I just wanted to be able to keep up with everybody.
Well, it certainly has been a dream come true for this Pittsburgh boy to be a small part of what's on Trib Live and have Next on the Tee as part of the content available there in the sports section. I certainly appreciate the opportunity more than I can say, Justin.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate having you. I mean, your content, this is the volume of content that this podcast turns out, the quality, obviously the level of guests that you have, your insight, your passion. And again, not every, you know, I can look at other sites and other media entities that maybe I would consider competition to us, and I don't see golf podcasts, golf content, if at all, not to the level of what you produce. So it's a great asset to be able to have that in our portfolio.
Justin, before I let you go, remind everybody again how they can stay up to date with the Trib and all the wonderful content, where they can do it online and on social media.
Yeah, again, the website is triblive.com, TRIBLIVE.com. So obviously that's your main, again, your number one site there for all things Western PA. There's links off to that too that go to the Trib Live High School Sports Network. I won't give a very long winded URL. I'll just say, just click off there, or if you just speak it into Google, you'll find it. So TribLive.com, Trib Live High School Sports Network. Again, you can search them on any Facebook, Twitter. You know, you'll find the accounts there to follow. And then if you want to follow me specifically, you'll get a whole lot more pro wrestling on those feeds. But you can follow me at Justin Labar.
Justin, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and be a part of the show. It was great to meet you last week in person. It's even better getting to spend more time with you here, hearing all about your stories and your visions and that sort of thing. Thank you so much for everything you do for me and this show and for Trib Live.
No, thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having me on. And yes, it was great to see you last week. That was awesome.
Take care, Justin. All the best to you and your family. Look forward to doing this again soon with you.
Thanks, Chris.
See you, Justin. That is Justin Labar. L-A-B-A-R is the spelling of his last name. And this guy is so multi-talented. He's done such a great job from college all the way through his time now with the Trib and Busted Open. And his insights and his talent are just immense. And a wonderful guy on top of all of that. I had the privilege of spending a little bit of time with him at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company when I was up there last week. And just a great individual. Sharing his talent, has a great vision, and he's bringing it all together. The amount of wonderful content on TribLive.com, again, it's all of the Pittsburgh sports, it's all of the high school sports, it's all of the cities around town. So if you want to get into a micro, want to know about your city, you have an opportunity to do that on Trib Live and see what's going on in the community around you. And then and obviously the greater Pittsburgh area and all the great sports that's going on, the U.S. Open and all of that sort of thing. So Justin has done an amazing job with that, and I certainly look forward to catching up with him, getting his insights as we get into later on in the summer, maybe what's going on in and around the city of Pittsburgh with the Pirates, as we get into training camp with the Steelers, and all of that sort of thing. So thanks to Justin. We'll catch up with him again before too long. Coming up next is a longtime friend of the show and a two-time winner out on tour and a four-time Hall of Fame inductee, and that is Richard Zokel. Before I bring Richard into the show, I want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at On Point Golf and their out-of-this-world On Point Golf Ball Marker. And if you don't have one, folks, you really need to go check it out at onpointgolf.us. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with OnPoint, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an on-point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use on-point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. Okay, now back in making his eighth appearance with me here on Next on the Tee is former PGA Tour pro Richard Zokel. Let me remind you about Richard's background. He's from Kitimat, British Columbia, which is on the coast in the central part of the province. Played his college golf at Brigham Young from 1977 to 1981. Where he helped them to first or second place finishes in the Western Athletic Conference all 4 years he was there. They finished second in the national championship in 1980. A year later, he captained them to the national championship. Individually, Richard won the international champions tournament over in Morocco in 1980. He won the 1981 Canadian Amateur Championship by a stroke over Blaine McAllister in a sudden death playoff. Then he turned pro. Among his other wins were the 1982 British Columbia Open and the 1984 Utah State Open. On the PGA Tour, he won twice in 1992 at the Deposit Guarantee Classic and the Greater Milwaukee Open. 2001, he won the Canadian PGA Championship. In 2009, that 81 BYU golf team, they were inducted into the Brigham Young Athletics Hall of Fame. And he was inducted into the British Columbia Golf Hall of Fame that same year. 2011, he was inducted into the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, and last year, he was inducted into the BC Sports Hall of Fame. He is now the founder and CEO of MindTrack Golf, which you can find online at mindtrackgolf.com, and track is spelled T-R-A-K, so mindtrackgolf.com. And I'm excited to have Richard back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Richard, how are you, my friend?
I am good, Chris. Delighted to be back with you. I always love our conversations and look forward to this one.
I appreciate it. All right, so Richard, I want to start off our time this week by going back to your early days because you were an all-star pitcher in Little League. Then one day in 1971, Stan Leonard, another Canadian golf legend who won eight Canadian PGA championships and three times out on the PGA Tour, he asked you to caddy for him at the BC Open. On the same day, you had a key Little League game. So it feels like that day was kind of a fork in the road for you. Is that accurate?
I would say so, yes, and you're digging pretty deep in there to get that information, but it was. I recall it like it was yesterday, and I played a lot of sports, and it was a great honor to be considered, you know, first-string pitcher in our opening of the Little League playoffs in Vancouver, and but I was starting to get into golf, and I admired golf pro so much and wanted to, you know, had a dream of like, hey, I want to be a golf pro. And then when Stan Leonard asked me to caddy for him, it wasn't even a close answer. I never played baseball that day, the day after. And I admired him so much. He was, he finished a second in the Masters, I think one time as well. And he was our head pro at Marine Drive Golf Club, the golf course that I grew up in Vancouver. And it just seemed to me like the right thing to do. And a number of, forks in the road have come together, you know, and allowed my path to get to the PGA Tour. But that's absolutely correct, Chris.
I want to skip ahead because I want to spend the majority of our time this time around talking about a new book that you're in the process of writing. You were telling me prior to the show that you're looking ahead to next Father's Day for it to be released. It's called Zocalology, Winning with Your Mind, which isn't just about golf, by the way. It's about what happened when you hit a psychological brick wall. And I've heard several of your peers talk about this subject. So to me, Richard, for a guy who went from being a walk-on at BYU without a scholarship to becoming team captain and leading that team to a national championship, talk about that psychological brick wall and what it was.
Well, yeah, and the brick wall that and that's a good point you speak of, because the brick wall is in our mind, and those that believe that they can get through it, they can, and those that don't believe they can't get through it, they won't. Great, Henry Ford quote. And golf is, and we're seeing so much of this psychological aspect of the game. Just look at what Scottie Scheffler's doing right now, and how he speaks openly about he doesn't get attached to the results. Money doesn't mean any much to him. It's not important. He inherently stays in the present moment. I think he was passed down those skill sets probably from his family, his parents. Then you kind of look over to the next best player in the world. Let's Rory McIlroy, and we all know the history of him not being able to. He won so fast so early, and then he got caught up with expectations, and he struggled to win a major for 14 years, and then finally won the Masters to win the Grand Slam. But it was a big psychological barrier. And then we watched him this past spring go through this. We went through this emotional roller coaster with him. He had this four-shot lead going into the final hole, going into the final round. He double bogeys the first hole, and it felt like it alleviated pressure for him. And then he played so well, then so poorly, and then so well, and then hit some, ridiculously crazy shots like on 13 into Ray's Creek. And then he hit this remarkable 7-iron hook around the trees on 15, and then a great tee shot on, or a second shot, 8-iron on 17, and then he's got a simple 125-yard shot on 18. All he's got to do is hit the green and win, and he doesn't. So, and then when he finally wins this thing that we all shared with him, this collapse of emotional. So this, if the two best players in the world, one struggles with the psychological wall, and he got through it, and the other one does it so beautifully, and it's his greatest, aspect and asset to performance. This game is really, focused on psychology, and it's something that we got to get better at, and that's why I'm involved with this company called Mindtrack Golf.
Richard, you mentioned the word expectations, and I've talked with Hal Sutton numerous times on this subject, because part of his struggle over the course of his career, and I think several of your peers have been here as well, is the idea of living up to not only your own expectations, but the other people's expectations, people putting expectations on you. You should be winning more. You need to do this, or you should be doing that. And talk about trying to deal with other people's expectations. And is that something that derailed you at some point during the course of your career?
It did numerous times in the book Zocalogy. I talk intimately about my issues and what I call, if you get caught in this cycle, I call it being stuck in golf insanity, because you're repeating it over and over again. And it starts with expectations, and that builds up into becoming result oriented. And all golfers, by nature, what we're motivated to do is the result and the score. And nobody has really been able to, particularly on the coaching side, teach golfers to think properly. You just go forward. And then what happens is you become result oriented. It's the result of the score determines whether you win or whether you lose or where you stand. But when all of us golfers are constantly thinking about results, we then develop expectations. And if we allow other people's expectations on us, that's on us. That's a dysfunctional mindset, and we all seem to do it. And we need to have a system to get out of it, because when we get emotionally attached to results, it creates stress. It creates risk. It becomes fear gets involved. And then when we don't meet those expectations because we're so we then think we're failing, and we are failing, and those are psychological problems. So there's two types of results. So when we Rory wanting that Masters so importantly, so he can complete the career Grand Slam, that is that result that he wants to get is an extrinsic. He's extrinsically motivated because winning the Masters means he will be in the top only six people who've ever won the career Grand Slam. So that extrinsic result is buried in a lot of pressure and a lot of and it triggers risk and it triggers fear. So what we want to do is have a system that we so like an example, if your desire is to hit your goal is to hit the fairway. And you immediately said, my goal right now, I've got to hit this fairway. You're getting the cart before the horse. What you need to do is you got to pull back and make an execution, an assessment of the club you're going to hit, and then a successful execution. Now, these are results too, but the difference is they're intrinsic results, like feel, and there's no expectation. So there's no pressure. So when you learn to detach emotionally from the result, that's when you stop the pressure on yourself. Like Rory McIlroy for the past 10 years has just been brutal on himself with his own self thinking because he was constantly extrinsically motivated for the result of winning that major championship, the Masters.
You mentioned the phrase getting out of it. How are you able at whatever point in time during the course of your career, during the course of your life, how are you able to quiet the noise in your mind?
Well, that's what I did my rookie year. I had a lot of noise in my mind because I was I had such a hyperactive mind. I had high expectations and I wasn't able to meet them, so it was very frustrating. So what I had to do in my mind in 1982, I went through the whole piece and I explained this in the book. You know, I had only made like one cut from the start of the year till I get to the Greater Milwaukee Open, which was in the summertime. And I'm just every day, I'm just digging a more anxious hole in the ground for myself. And then I said, well, why don't you listen to music? So I put, had a Sony Walkman and I didn't even dare to do it in a practice round. I went right into the tournament with it and I haven't made a cut for 6 months and I'm in peril. And the first day I put this Walkman on and everyone thought I was crazy. And I'm listening to, Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin. And I get out there and I just shut out the world and shut out the noise. And I just listened to music, which was very soothing. Then when it was my turn to hit the shot, I'd take it off, go about my business, assessing the situation, executing the shot. And before that ball even landed, I'd have these headphones back on my head. And I was going, well, I was 1 under, 2 under, 3 under, 4 under, 5, 6. I'm coming down the last hole, 7 under par, Chris. I'm leading the tournament and there's all this, you know, the photographers were taking pictures. This was some audacious thing to do on the PGA Tour. And you know, I get through and I shoot 65 and I'm leading the tournament. So, and I'm going, wow, is this game ever psychological? It allowed me to clear out the noise, to let go of what was this barrier that was holding me back like an anchor. It freed me up. And so, and then that started me down the road that this whole psychology side, and I went through a number of cycles of success and failure and dysfunctional thinking. And before I was able to really grab hold of this system, this psychological, this thought protocol that all you focus on every single shot is the assessment of the shot that's going to lead to, and that includes your yardage, your wind, your lie, the strategy. And you make a decision or decisions at that time, and then you execute the shot as best as your capability. That's all you need to do. Those two things, assessing and executing, are key performance markers. And in order to simplify them, you don't have to, every golfer knows that if they're over the ball, they go, I got to do this or I have to do that right here. Your chances are you've been in golf insanity for quite some time and you're really lost. And you have this thing that comes back to you. And in order to detach from that, you have to have a different psychological protocol. And you have to recondition yourself out of this golf insanity.
So golf, just like any sport, is a copycat sport. Yep. People must have seen you wearing this Walkman and doing, you know, incredibly well, going out there to play. And I'm sure you shared the story with people about how it was able to quiet down your mind and help you in between shots. I'm surprised everybody didn't have a Walkman on the next day or certainly at the next tournament. Was there something said, something done? What happened with that?
Well, yeah, Jim Nelford actually tried it. My buddy, he tried it for a few months actually, and he had success with it as well. It wasn't, first of all, it was frowned upon. Like, and then after I finished it, I got pulled out by the PGA Tour officials. Said, "What are you listening to?" They had never seen anything like this. They had to call PGA Boatwright at the USGA to see if this was legal. And I'm going, "Oh my God, I shoot 65, 700 par is the easiest score I've ever shot in, and I'm going to get disqualified here." And PJ Boatwright gets back to the tour official and said, "No, there's nothing in the rule book that says you can't listen to music. Was he listening to any golf lessons? So if I happened to be listening to a golf lesson, they had disqualified me." But, and then the year later, the next year after I got my tour card, became an exempt player, I got paired with Arnold Palmer in San Diego, and I'm still wearing the headphones. And I was very nervous about this because, you know, Arnie's Mr. Palmer, and you got to take your hat off. And I was a little worried how he was going to think, that this radical rookie listening to headphones. But so we get on the first and the 10th tee at San Diego at Torrey Pines, big throne of people. I'm nervous as hell because I'm playing with Arnold Palmer. And I get there early and I pull up my headphones and I've got Led Zeppelin just blasting on the music on the headphones. And the gallery parts, Arnie walks through, he comes up on the tee. I take my headphones off, I put my hand out, and I go, "Richard Zokel, nice to meet you, Mr. Palmer." And he says, "Nice to meet you, Richard. What have you got going on here?" And I said, "Well, I like to listen to music when I play." And I said, "Would you like to try it?" And I've got like Stairway to Heaven playing on the thing. And Arnie puts it on, and they're taking pictures of Arnie with this. It wasn't his cup of tea, let's put it that way. And I'm sure he was wondering, what the hell is with these young players, these radical players nowadays, listening to music on the golf course? But I think it was, people were afraid to do it. I think a lot of people did it. And then I was talking to Lee Trevino, a few months ago. I wanted to get some stories straight with him. And he returns my call from Dallas and he goes, "Man, oh man, Richard," he said, you know how Trevino speaks. He says, "Man, you started listening to those headphones. Now everybody's doing it." Well, they can't do it on the golf course anymore. It's illegal, but you see them, you know, you're trying to set the tone. Music does that. It calms you down. It, like you said, it makes the noise go away, and it helps you from a psychological perspective.
So Richard, you know, the Bobby Jones famous quote, right? That golf is played on a 6-inch course, the space between your ears. Was there a moment in your career though, that, you know, as you were trying to figure out your way and forge your way out onto the PGA Tour and keep your tour card and all that sort of thing, was there a moment that you realized, look, my golf swing is fine, what I really need to work on is my state of mind?
Well, yeah. And usually it was always, there's kind of been a number of peaks and valleys that one goes through. And I certainly went through them, and I had to go through them a few times before it really resonated. And they were always in the low points. Like in the book, I tell about, you know, qualifying school, and I think it was 1986 at PGA West in California, and I'm in good position after four rounds, six round tournament, and I am leaking oil. And then by the last nine holes, I'm really on the bubble, and I get to the last hole and I am really choking my guts out, and I've got this, and I can feel myself so emotionally encumbered by this stress and by the situation and by the way I'm thinking, because I'm thinking about the results and my emotional attachment. When your ego starts to take over, you don't see it coming. And then you get back into these valleys and you know, the old saying, you can't see the forest for the trees to solve this problem. But then there's a break. There's a breaking point. And I just didn't want to be, you know, I was furious with myself. And I finally said, I don't give a shit. And I truly And I had to break it in that before my shot to the green on the last hole, because trying to do it after the round on the driving range is not the situation. You have to do it in competition. And everything led on the line. So I said, hell with it. I'm going after the pin, because if I know I played cautiously, I was going to probably make another bogey and miss. And I hit the most beautiful shot because I let the anchor go, Chris. And I was able to let it go. Like I got so pissed off with myself that I did let it go, and I hit a great shot and made it right on the number. And then even after that point, I still said, look, if this torture is what playing the PGA Tour is, I don't want any part of it. I don't care. I'm not going to do this to myself. I can't stand this golf insanity. But it did take me a few times to, you know, have to break through. And I make this analogy with music and rock music, because I listen to the headphones where in Pink Floyd, the song, I have become comfortably numb. And that's the feeling you got to break through when you break through the wall. And we do it in life, and we also do it on the golf course.
A couple of years prior to you getting that win, 1986, you get married, you mm-hmm. lose your tour card, you got to go back through Q school for, I think, what must have been about the third time at that point in your career. Talk about a ball of stress sitting there on your shoulders. How'd you deal with all of that?
Well, I had practiced and had success, obviously, you know, for each year, rookie year, doing the Disco Dick thing, listening to music, and then slipping back and reaching this break point. And so I started to learn from my mistakes, but the problem I had, I wasn't able to stop the low point. I love my, and it got through till 1991 was my fifth qualifying at the PGA qualifying school, Chris. And I made it 100% of the time. Every time I went back to the qualifying school five times, I made it five times. And then in that, my last one was 91. And then I tell the story how I became, it was through my desperation that I created the inspiration, and I won twice in 1992. One of those, the Deposit Guarantee Classic opposite the Masters, was an unofficial win. The money counted, but that win was a big win for me. And then later in the season, I went on to win a second time at the Greater Milwaukee Open. And then a few years later, I fell again. And fell back into that dip, and kind of then took a little bit of a sabbatical, and then came back, and then I created this new system, and that new system of being able to, you know, stop the golf insanity was the most important thing. And this is the, you know, stopping golf insanity. The most important piece of equipment we have is our mind, and yet every coach is teaching golf swing. It's not the golf swing. Whether you're going to make it or don't make it isn't the way you swing the golf club. Whether you make it or don't make it on the PGA Tour is how you think. That's what happens. And I think there's a huge opportunity with this protocol to get most golfers back on track.
Richard, the PGA Tour used to be a complete meritocracy. You either made the cut, mm-hmm. or you didn't, and if you didn't make the cut, you didn't get paid. Nowadays, we have the signature events, no cuts, some guaranteed payouts, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But they used to say, if you want to make more money, play better, which is cold and heartless. But it was the reality. What was it like for you back in the day trying to live within that reality?
Well, yeah. So that term, play better, talk to every tour player that's been out there, that I think it was coined by Jim Colbert. And it was the first time I heard it was through Colbert's mouth, who said, look, there's, you know, we're playing for so much. This was back in the early 80s, in the mid 80s and 90s, when there wasn't a lot of money. It was a lot of money for us. And it was sitting there, and everyone stands up on the first tee at the same score. And Jim, you know, like a lot of tour players start, you know, even today with all the money they're making, they're doing a lot of complaining. And Jim Colbert, you know, in meetings would say to people, look, if you want to solve your problem, play better. Lanny Watkins was another one who would say, play better. And that was really the key. And that aspect in the book that I talk about is the key to surviving on the PGA Tour is playing better. When you play better on the PGA Tour, it solves all your problems. I can assure you that.
No doubt. Richard, I want to go back to the 2000 U.S. Open. We all remember that for Tiger blowing away the field by 15 strokes, but you made the cut. You shot one of the best rounds of the day in the final round, shot 69 there at Pebble Beach, which included a front 930. What do you recall about that week?
Well, that week, I mean, I love U.S. Opens. I love everything about them. I always have. You know, I'm not a big, powerful player. Like, I couldn't compete with physical talent of Fred Couples. But I had to kind of, you know, think my way around a golf course, and the strategy of a U.S. Open and the demand of it just equalized things a little better for me. So I embraced the U.S. Opens and loved them. And that year, particularly, I created this system early the previous year, and I started practicing this system that I talked about of just charting down my key performance markers of assessing and executing every shot and detaching from the results. And then I had a poor round on the third round of that U.S. Open at 2000, shot 80. And I'm going, hey, look at this. I mean, look, it's Pebble Beach. It's the U.S. Open. You're really playing well. You know, Tiger's doing his thing. This is a big deal. Just go out there and do the best you can. And it was the aha moment. Each shot, I literally did not care about the result. And I just focused in on how simple I could make the game, assessing and executing each shot. And when that big putt went in on the ninth hole, I didn't even know what I shot. We're going down the next tee in the 10th hole, and my caddy says to me, he says, do you know what you shot on the front nine? I said, no, and I don't care. And this was the real aha moment. He said, well, you shot 30, which was a U.S. Open record for nine holes at Pebble Beach, and I'm not sure that anyone else shot 30. You know, excuse me, there was one. Arnold shot 30 in the 60 U.S. Open at Cherry Hills. So there's only a couple 30s on the front nine. And then the aha moment, Chris, was when my caddy told me that, and it didn't take me out of that state of mind. And I still didn't care. So I successfully detached from the result. All I cared about was assessing how good could I get by assessing and executing this shot right here, right now. It simplified the process.
Richard, one of the things that as a kid, I grew up and, you know, collected all kinds of sports cards and things of that nature. And around 1991, 92, Pro Set starts to come out with golf cards. Mm-hmm. And now there's a Richard Zokel 1991 card. There's another one for 1992, your big year when you break through and get your wins. What was it like the first time you saw yourself on a trading card?
Well, I remember baseball trading cards. And those were the only ones that I collected. And we'd play cards at recess, you know, up against the wall, that type of thing, a little bit of a gambling game. But yeah, I thought it was, you know, I said to myself, well, the PGA Tour is coming to its own. This is a long time ago. Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting that they would. I was glad that they did it so deep into all the players, because, you know, I would have figured if they were going to do this, they were going to do it for the top players. I didn't know they were going to do it for all the players. But it was delightful to see that, absolutely.
2001, you won the Canadian PGA Championship, setting a tournament record, finishing 17 under par. That had to be a hugely satisfying win for you.
It really was. And at that time, I was only getting deeper and deeper into the psychology of, or I should say zoology, into aspect of it. After I won, I had the opportunity to meet Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle's he wrote the book The Power of Now. I think it sold 12 million books. He was based in Vancouver, and his publisher introduced me to him at a party, and I went up to him and I shook his hand. I said, "Thank you so much," because it was his book, and there were a few other ones, but it, at the time, you know, learning how to be present, stay in the now, as he calls it. And practice that. And so that when you get in those difficult positions in life, and I use obviously golf as my situations that I get into that are high pressure. If you set out this thought protocol and are able to lean back on it, it will get you through these difficult times with high performance, not just surviving it, but you can perform at your highest level when you're in these states of mind. And I thanked him very much for his contribution and how it helped me and win that. And I remember going out in the final round and all I did was, you know, focused in. I was getting quite good at it, focusing in on assessing each shot, both the assessment and the execution. And I pulled away from the field, shot 66 that day. And I think I won by four, but it was a very powerful experience.
Richard, a couple more before I let you go. And as I mentioned in your introduction, you're now in four Hall of Fame. Since 2009, you get into the BYU Athletics Hall of Fame along with your teammates, British Columbia Golf Hall of Fame, the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, and more recently, the BC Sports Hall of Fame. What's it like for you when you get these notifications, these phone calls, and they say, Richard, we want to induct you into a Hall of Fame?
Well, yeah, they're unexpected. I think in the consistent talk, if you ask anyone that same question, they go, well, we don't do it to become in the Hall of Fame. We want to, you know, win tournaments. And when they do, they catch you a little off guard because you have, I hadn't thought of that. And the last one, the last couple, you know, they made me quite emotional and very proud that my children and my wife and what it really does, Chris, to what it did for me was it really kind of let me know that the risk I took to become a professional golfer and carry these burdens and learn from them, it was all worth it. Even though, you know, the money's not the same, you know, you can't take those victories away and the learning experience that I did, like I talk about now, it's not, you know, I wasn't out there trying to win golf tournaments. I was trying to figure out myself and my limitations and stop thinking with a dysfunctional mindset and start thinking a proper way. Because if you take control of your thoughts, you also can take control of your happiness.
As you talk about thinking and all the things that we have talked about during the course of this conversation, when you get a quiet moment, whether it's by yourself or wherever it is, and you start to reflect back and think about your career and your journey in life and the things that you did overcome, and now the fact that you are for your children and your grandchildren, mm-hmm. and you've got a legacy in four Hall of Fames, you've had a wonderful, fulfilling life. Things have worked out. You've done the things that you needed to do in order to achieve the things that you set out to achieve. Do you give yourself the credit for having done all of those things? Do you allow yourself the moment to say, you know what, I did some good here?
Yes, I do. And that's part of learning to have a functioning, a proper mindset, because you do need to pat yourself on the back, say it was. And when you have that realization that it was all worth all the heavy lifting and all the failing and learning from it, and then being able to, like, I look at my kids, my twin boys are 38 years old now, and our daughter is 34, and I see the human beings that we have brought into this world. That is the real, because we pass it down, and whether we know it or not. And I'm very proud of my kids on who they've become and how they, what they think of their parents and how they're raising their children now. And it is the greatest gift. And you are absolutely right. Part of succeeding is patting yourself on the back when you make those life lessons. And the only way you truly learn is from your mistakes. And if there's lots of mistakes in your life and you have a better perspective, you will figure that thing out. That's for sure.
Richard, before I let you go, remind our listeners again the name of the book, when it's going to come out, and how they can stay up to date with you.
Sure. Well, I've got to submit the manuscript by July 1st. The book is called Zocology, Winning with Your Mind, How Disco Dick Learned to Compete and Win on the PGA Tour by Changing the Way He Thought. The publisher is ECW Press out of Toronto, and it's going to be released in 2026 on Father's Day. So Sunday of the U.S. Open, that's when the book is going to be released. So I'm sure we got to go through the wintertime and get this thing edited and all put together. And the stories in there, I was so excited to get Lee Trevino's story in there and so many other stories in there. It's going to be an inside look from a journeyman's perspective.
How can they stay up to date with you over social media?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Richard Zocal. I can be quite opinionated on it from time to time. I've taken a little bit of a sabbatical from it, but when talking about U.S. Opens, rules of golf, politics, not you know, politics and golf, that's for sure. I'll stay away from the other politics. No point in that. But happy to take any questions.
Richard, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show, like I mentioned at the top, for an eighth time. Each and every time that you've joined me, it's been fantastic to hear your stories. I've learned a lot along the way as well, and I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of this book, because from what I've seen to this point in the outline and the things you talked about, it's going to be fantastic.
Well, I do appreciate it. You're a good friend to golf, Chris, and thank you for having me.
Richard, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. I hope we get this privilege again soon.
Look forward to it.
See you, Richard.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that's the great Richard Zokol. Z-O-K-O-L is the spelling of his last name. And look, you don't end up in four Hall of Fames on accident. There's a reason. All of the things that he talked about from a mental standpoint and the hurdles that he overcame and the thought processes and all the things that he changed along the way certainly had a positive impact on him, because he went on to a great PGA Tour career. And now when you think about the different Hall of Fames, what I thought about when Richard was talking through all of that is a legacy that, as he mentioned, for your children, for your grandchildren and the rest of your family as it goes on down through the years. That's going to live there forever. You're going to be able to see him in four different Hall of Fames forever for the things that he was able to achieve. How great is that? And now we're going to get more stories when the book comes out, Zokology, next Father's Day. So I can't wait for that and get my hands on it and read it. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I want to send out my sincere thanks again to Justin Labar and Richard Zokol for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry, will be back fresh off his marathon day of golf, which happened today to raise money for the local Southwest Florida PGA section and their charities. I think this is the ninth year that Tom has done this, and I think he's ranged somewhere between 110 and I think 168 holes, depending on the weather that day. So he's doing amazing work and yeoman's work for the PGA section down there. Looking forward to hearing all about that next week. One of the all-time great instructors up in the Met section, John Kennedy, will be back. And we'll have a Next on the Tee debut from Kyle Malou, who is the chief marketing officer for one of the emerging brands in the game of golf, Sunday Swagger. Looking forward to hearing all about that. So it's going to be a great time, folks. Hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. I want to send out my thanks again to the folks over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, which you heard from Justin at the top of the show, for hosting this show on their site, for coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, like the U.S. Open at Oakmont, including your favorite sports. Go to triblive.com. You can find the show by then clicking on the sports section tab, and you're going to see the most recent episode for you front and center on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on sports and then podcast network. Then you're going to see the Next on the Tee logo. Click on that. And many of the most recent episodes are going to be right there for you as well. You can also find the show over on Good Pods. And a huge thank you to those folks for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. I appreciate those guys so very much. Thanks to them. Please download their free app and listen to your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But you can also find the show over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, golfnewsnet.com. Pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, you're going to find this show on that site as well. But folks, as I say each and every week, my sincere thanks go out to each and every one of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next week, hit them straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on TribLive or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.